Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, here we are again at Tennis Podcast Towers, otherwise known as my flat. The three of us, myself and Matt, who have spent the entire day sat in exactly the positions that we find ourselves now. Well, apart from a couple of hours this morning when Matt played actual tennis.
I did. The longest time I've spent playing tennis in a while. And I think I'm going to be feeling it tomorrow.
You and Angelique Kerber and Sara Saribas Tormo both.
Those were the vibes.
More of that later. David's joined us fresh from his BBC TV commentary shift. We were listening to you on BBC Two not an hour or so ago, David.
I'm glad I didn't know that at the time. I'd have been very, very, very nervous.
It's just talking on the telly.
Yeah. But, you know, like people I know might have been watching.
You've got Billie Jean on your knee.
Yeah.
It's becoming a bit of a love affair.
Well, we get on. We've got an understanding, haven't we? We're mates, aren't we? Yeah, we're mates.
She says yes. She says it was with her eyes, though. She does all of her talking with her eyes. So what about today, then, at the tennis? Not Matt's tennis, the secondary tennis. Happening at SW19. On centre court, it felt a little bit like the morning after the night before or the day after the night before. They're decent enough matches. I think the Barty blink of a match had moments of drama. The first set of Federer against Gasquet was quite exciting.
Could you take me through those? Because I didn't get to watch any of them because I was doing other commentaries. So I'd love to know what went on.
Well, the end of that sentence was, but none of them were particularly. I was thinking, what do we lead with in this podcast? And I don't think any of those centre court matches just grab you as lead stories.
No, probably not lead, but I think Barty and Federer were significant, I felt. Barty hit 9 double faults today and was having real problems with her serve. And I was a bit worried that perhaps meant that she's struggling with that hip injury again. And she is telling everyone that is not the reason, and that's great to hear. She just said she was having a few difficulties with it. She didn't play particularly well against Blinkova, but she played well when she needed to. When her back was against the wall, she did find her best tennis. She's got a tricky match next, I think, against Siniakova, who loves playing seeds at slams and has beaten a few of them.
When the pressure's off her.
Totally. So that's Barty. Not a particularly notable match, but I think it's just interesting to monitor her form because I think it's tournament defining. If she's playing really well, she's a real favourite to possibly win this title. If she's a bit off, it brings just so many more people into it. And then with Federer, I can't help but think that Richard Gasquet's played him into form. as
that's nice of him.
As he's done
it's
throughout
the role
his career.
He plays in tennis.
Yeah, totally. I was watching the first set of that on my second screen, and Federer wasn't playing well in the first set. He was struggling. But then we tuned into it, Catherine, at 5-all. Mm. It got upgraded to the telly. And suddenly Federer was sublime for the rest of the match. You know, really striking the ball wonderfully. None of the tension in his game that I felt was there against Mannarino. He was free, he was flowing, and that meant that the shot making was just brilliant. And afterwards, in his post-match interview, he had that giddy face on, you know, laughing during the interview. He seemed in a really good place today. I thought it was significant what we saw from Federer today. He thinks it's one of the best three matches he's played this year. It's the best I've seen from him. A real step up.
Mm. Well done, Richard Gasquet.
Well, was it because it was Richard Gasquet?
Well, that's the other... That is a possible factor.
Just being the perfect foil.
The perfect opponent for him. Someone he's so comfortable playing against. But the fact he didn't start the match brilliantly and grew into it, I think, is encouraging. It's not like it was there from the beginning. He did seem to find his timing and his feel.
Who's he got now?
Cameron Norrie.
Oh,
who won in extremely professional, dominant fashion over Alex Bolt on court number one today.
You know, from three love down.
From three love down in the opening set, and then I think he won 11 of the next 12 games. And that's really impressive from Cameron Norrie. You know, playing on the second court at Wimbledon suddenly as a seeded player, you know, in a completely different stratosphere to the last time he played Wimbledon, when he'd barely ever won a grass court match or barely played many grass court matches. This is massively new territory for him, kind of all coming at once, and for him to deal with that as brilliantly as he did today, I thought was very impressive. And I think Federer will win that. I think that's probably a good matchup for him, but he will test his fitness, Cam Norrie.
He's so reliable now, isn't he? He turns up. You are going to get a match from that guy. And look at the number of semis and finals he's reached this year. I know he hasn't won a final yet, but he just keeps turning up. And to then do the same at Wimbledon, particularly, I think that was really tricky, that start. Honestly, he could have lost that to Luca Pui. Not that I feel that it was a reflection on him, but that's a really tricky scenario to be shunted out onto another court, only get the one set in before darkness or rain or whatever, and then have to come back having lost a tiebreak set. I mean, it would have been, there's loads of good players who would have lost that in his position, and he just shows up and sorts it out. I think he can push Federer. I think he can beat Federer. If Federer's not there, he can take him out.
I mean, that's what he does, isn't it? When he keeps players honest, and I know that sounds really demeaning to what he does, but you cannot afford to have a subpar day against Cameron Norrie. and he's going to have to produce sets 2 and 3 against Gasquet, I think, to beat Cameron Norrie. I'm persuaded by how good Federer was in the latter stages against Gasquet, and the fact that he's provided the service, Gasquet, of playing him into form. I think Federer will probably have the level to beat Norrie, but he'll need that level.
Yeah.
For sure. So sandwiched in between Barty and Federer on centre court was Elena Vesnina and Coco Gauff, 6-4, 6-3. For Gauff in that one. Must confess, I didn't see much of it. I saw the post-match press conference of Coco Gauff afterwards, where she said, "I feel like a completely different person to the one who last played on centre court here, all of 2 years ago."
Wow, that's really interesting. Did she explain in what way at all?
In terms of life experience, perspective. I mean, I guess you couldn't really, both on a personal and a sort of macro global level, it's hard to imagine two more dramatic, life-changing years.
Yeah.
I suppose.
And 15 to 17 is a big jump anyway. And for... That was a very impressive bit of athleticism from Billie Jean to just leap from a standing start on the floor into Catherine's lap.
It was Monfils-esque.
Yes. but, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not surprising. And look, she's... Even when you listen to her, you can and see the results and the performances, the professionalism, the maturity, you can see how she's got 2 years older and a lot more because of the situation.
She said it makes her feel more nervous than any other court, centre court. And given that, the fact that she got the job done today in straight sets, I find very impressive. And it's more evidence of what we started talking about at the French Open, that this is... It's not even that much of a story. You know, her playing on centre court, her winning, is just sort of what happens now. She's quietly like making her way through the draw.
She's a factor in every draw that she's in now.
Yeah. So while that was on-ish, the matches aren't totally aligned. Centre court starting half an hour later than number one court. But we had Carlos Alcaraz against Daniil Medvedev over on court number one. Medvedev... On the face of it, a very one-sided winner, 4-1 and 2, an hour and 35 minutes. But the crowd really took to Carlos Alcaraz, big time.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it was a straightforward win for Medvedev. I think the scoreline is reflective of how the actual tennis went. But as you said, the crowd really loved Alcaraz and his efforts. I think they realized he was a massive underdog and had no experience on grass, and yet he showed glimpses of what we think he's going to be capable of in a few years' time. And that's kind of all you want, isn't it? A player to give their all and show what they're about, and that's what Alcaraz did. And Medvedev, of course, was playing up to that, and not, you know, during the match, not necessarily enjoying the fact that they were supporting Alcaraz so much. You know, there was sort of...
But don't you think he was... It was enjoying, for sure. Not enjoying it.
Totally.
Yeah, it was pantomime. He raised his finger to his ear when he won the first set because nobody cheered.
Nobody cheered, and he did it again when he went up a break in the second. Yeah, he's looking really good. And a funny line from his press conference was that as so many players are being asked about the slippery courts, you know, obviously lots of articles are being written about that. He was asked about it and he said, well, I'm actually on a streak that I haven't slipped on grass all season and I want to keep that up. I just thought it was a classic Medvedev line.
Clutch whatever straws you can, I say, Daniil. His next opponent is Marin Cilic, who beat Benjamin Bonzi, the French qualifier, in four sets. That was one of the last matches to finish today. Cilic against Medvedev. Tell you what, I only saw match point of the Cilic-Bonzi match, but it was a fiery Marin Cilic. Wasn't it? We both sat here watching the sort of Today at Wimbledon roundup and both sort of went, oh,
blimey.
Who's that jumping out of our screen? Well, and what's eaten Marin Cilic?
He's raging against the dimming of the fire, isn't he? And he's showed a bit of defiance in the last couple of months, winning that title in Stuttgart. And I noticed it a bit at Queen's. I think this is really interesting because he used to be in Medvedev's shoes. He was the contender. He was the one we were looking at to challenge Federer for the title. Here, he played him in the final. He comes back the next year as the Queen's champion, and he ran into Guido Pella and had that awful experience of being two sets up and losing. But he can still play. He understands grass court tennis. He's a dangerous player, and Medvedev's going to have to really produce, you would think, in order to win. And if he does play his best, I think he will win. But this is one of those potentially torch passing moments, really, where somebody establishes themselves as a threat at the expense of somebody who's desperately trying to stay relevant.
Are you saying, David, that the movement is on the line?
I don't really. I never think of Daniil Medvedev as part of the movement.
Oh, he is.
He's older, but he's got to be.
If Berrettini's part of the movement, then Medvedev's part of the movement.
I think of it as different because I think of Medvedev as already there. I don't think he's somebody coming along.
But he had to move to get there.
Yes, but he's already done it. He's achieved it. He's established himself.
But, yeah, okay. But I think of the movement in this day and age as kind of anyone that isn't the big three.
Yeah.
Okay.
And absolutely.
If the new challenger to the big three gets beaten by one of the old guys that the big three always used to beat.
Yeah. Okay. You've talked me into it, and I think particularly because it's grass, and it's Cilic who used to be the thing on grass. Mm. So I think it's fair to say that because Medvedev is still short of a win, a bit of a statement win, and that would be one. I think
if it gets through that, he could play Alexander Bublik in the fourth round. And anybody that is thinking, oh, that sounds exciting, I'll just remind you of their first round French Open match, which was the most desperately disappointing experience of my tennis watching year.
Well, I think you just need to now flip this and stop the hype, Catherine, ahead of it.
Don't you worry, David. I won't be hyping that one bit. We won't even mention it on the podcast.
Yes, but then as long as you then still watch it, because the thing is, I think, you know, quietly might work out.
Okay, sure. Bublik's got to get through Hubert Hurkacz before then. Bublik is somebody that Nick Kyrgios had some very interesting stuff to say about.
Oh, right.
After his very, dare I say it again, professional win over Jean-Luc Maguire.
Yes, professional, but with his greatest party trick.
Oh.
It's back.
What is your favourite thing that Nick Kyrgios has ever done on a tennis court, David?
Well, I'd have to go through a few here. It's probably the one where he goes up to somebody in the crowd on match point and asks where to serve. He didn't.
He did.
and in fact, second row. Yeah, it was to the side,
to the left-hand side.
Describe the scene. Come on, please.
The service line, left-hand side. He had to sort of really lean into the stands to get to them.
How do you think he selected them?
I assume they'd been really into the match up to that point. He mentioned in his press conference that he was being coached by some fans. He said, I was just being full-on coached by some people in the stands, so I can only assume that it was those same people.
Yeah, and apparently he didn't just do it on match point. Apparently he did it other times during the match.
In his opening
with
service
different people.
Game, he hit two aces and an underarm serve.
And once he'd won the match, he obviously thanked the person who had suggested that he serve out wide or whatever and said, sorry, can't hug you.
Don't you just think there's a little bit of him having watched Andy Murray last night and chosen people that he's going to engage with and thought,
sure.
Okay then, Andy, I'm going to get in on this.
I think he's having such a great time, Kyrgios.
Yes.
And is in a brilliant place, and I think he might have had some therapy. I don't know, but he's just got this sense of self that I've not seen in him before, and it's really magnetic. I know we've always, you know, thought of him as magnetic, but in a slightly different way. It's very magnetic. He knows who he is, and he's comfortable with it, and he's not trying to prove anything, it feels like.
Yeah, totally. And the great line that he gave about Bublik was that he doesn't conform in the way that the tennis world wants him to. And he was talking about Bublik and also about himself when he gave that answer.
And he talked about the tennis world relying on Bublik when he retires. I felt like saying Bublik's only sort of a year or two younger than you, Nick. But anyway.
Yes, he called himself an old soul.
Yes. That's the second time he's done that. He said he was really feeling it physically today, but hey, it didn't stop him winning in straight sets. He will face Felix Auger-Aliassime next, David. You saw him safely through to round number three.
Yeah, but that match was an ordeal. I very much enjoyed it, but it was an ordeal because he was not playing well until, well, pretty much until he won the tie break in the third set. He's playing against Mikael Ymer of Sweden, who I really enjoyed watching. He's a very talented guy, a lot of flair and a lot of... He's got a little bit of what Kyrgios has in terms of this innate understanding of what to do in a situation, what stroke to play to put it in a difficult position for your opponent, the hands to be able to adjust at the last second and divert it down the line or cross court. And actually, he was outplaying Felix Auger-Aliassime for quite long parts of the match. He made Auger-Aliassime look a bit ordinary, a little bit one-dimensional, a little bit paint-by-numbers as a tennis player, which I think sometimes that is a problem for the Canadian. He smacks the ball as hard as he can, but there's never any real surprises to what he's doing. It's whether it goes in or out enough. That's really what it comes down to. I mean, the match started farcically, to be honest. I mean, it followed the match we'll come on to talk about, which was the Kerber against Ribas Tormo match. But Auger-Aliassime came out onto the court, and it took a full 15 minutes for Ymer to arrive. And Felix has just stood there.
This happened with Andreescu yesterday.
I mean, it was very strange.
Or 2 days ago.
I don't know. I mean, the day before, Ymer had a five-set classic with Joe Wilfried Tsonga, and he'd come back from 2-1 down, done brilliantly to win that. Maybe he was suffering physically, I don't know. But he came out onto the court so late, and it was and he started terribly, immediately donated his serve to Auger-Aliassime, and that really was the set. And the other thing is, I mean, Ymer, he doesn't take more than 3 or 4 seconds between points. He finishes a point and he's got another ball and he's ready to serve every single time. And it makes him look like he's not that bothered at times. And I think that's deceiving. I think he is bothered most of the time. But what happened was that I was really impressed with is once Auger-Aliassime had won that tiebreak, he got himself really professional to hold onto his serve, 2 love service games, then won the tiebreak. Then in the final set, whilst Ymer was honestly looking for things to blame for why it was going wrong, i.e. the court being very slippery, and he did have a horrible fall that really was worrying. And he might have hurt himself, actually, in a way that impacted the match. But there's a big difference in attitude. You could see the difference with Auger-Aliassime having a much more Nadal-like attitude. It matters to him. He is going to be present in every point. He might be too tight and overhit, and he was overhitting a lot, but he just won the match mentally in the end. And you could tell it mattered more to him than it did to his opponent to win. And now he faces Kyrgios, who I saw him play at Queen's a couple of years ago, and it was an incredible scoreline, sort of a couple of tie breaks and a 7-5, something like that. And Auger-Aliassime won. But that was a Kyrgios in a very different mind space to now.
Mm. Mm. Very passionate celebration from Auger-Aliassime at the end, I noticed.
Quite a triumph, I thought, of given the context of his 8 finals, 8 losses, 16 sets, 16 sets lost. I think this is just another little stepping stone of pressure situation that he came through, and I think it means something to him.
The celebration reminded me a bit of his celebration at the US Open last year after winning the match that set up the meeting with Andy Murray, and I can't quite remember.
Mute,
there we go. And he did this big gnarly celebration, and then he did his on-court interview and he said, "I'm trying to be more ruthless.
Yes,
it doesn't come easily to me. I'm trying to instill that sort of into my psyche, and that sort of flitted into my mind when I saw his celebration upon winning today. So, yeah, Felix against Kyrgios I'm here for it. Mm. I mean, I'm quite literally here for it because I imagine I'll be sitting in this exact seat in 2 days' time, juggling that with the football.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Let's get on to talk about the match that held up Felix Auger-Aliassime and Mikael Immer coming onto court, because it was the match of the tournament. I mean, there's lots of matches I haven't seen, and yet I feel completely confident in saying Angelique Kerber against Sara Cerebes-Tormo was the match of the tournament, and it's unlikely to be beaten on that front. And if it gets beaten, we are in for a treat. David, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, because I know
she wasn't there either.
I know you had to experience this match napping on a bench outside the court.
Correct. Yeah.
David heard the best match of the tournament.
I tell you, I got a sense of what it was like, though. I can't tell you how thrilled people sounded in that stadium. It was, I'll be honest, I was a bit disconcerted by just how packed that stadium was. It was at capacity. Mm. And that isn't what I thought was meant to be happening, first of all. Second of all, it's an all-ticketed court, and so often that court has got empty seats because people are just going off and having a look at other courts. Nobody was leaving this match. It was just one of those. I watched one changeover. I was waiting to come in near the end of the match, and one woman just ran out because she couldn't hold it anymore, and she went off to the loo. But then she was back in time for before they shut the gates again.
She's my hero.
She was amazing. And the noise, you got that feeling that this crowd just could not believe their luck. Mm. And when you then looked at the scoreboard and saw who it was, these are not okay. Angelique Kerber has won Wimbledon, and she is a name, but these people were just rejoicing in the moment of this magnificent sporting contest in which every rally seemed to be a mini epic.
Mm.
And they were loving it. When it was all finished, the standing ovation those two players got, it was like Andy Murray and Roger Federer out there, or Serena Williams, somebody that they might not get to see ever again, and they just wanted to show them the love that they had for them, for making them feel as they'd been feeling for the last 3 hours and 20 minutes.
Oh, well, I'm so thrilled to hear that. I mean, I could tell on the telly that the crowd were loving it, but to hear from someone who was there that it was
sort of there.
Kind of there.
Sort of there. Close to there.
Didn't see a point. Heard it all.
Very nearly there.
Oh, David. I mean, Sarah Suibas-Tormo has been a really interesting addition to the 2021 tennis season. I mean, she's been around. She's not a total newcomer, but she's grown into her role this year as someone who has played a lot of epic matches. I think she's played the longest match of the year and several matches over 2.5 hours. And Angelique Kerber is a player who I love watching. She just has an unorthodox style that nobody else has, and especially on grass, that game...
Yeah, it works on grass,
just,
doesn't it?
It just draws me in.
Remember that one she had against Muguruza a few years ago? That was match of the tournament as well.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, I was up for this match. I thought it would be good, but it exceeded all of those high expectations. Every single rally was something to behold. And they weren't just long rallies. They were such interesting rallies because Suibas-Tormo has got a wonderful slice backhand to
she's,
go
she's
with
got a...
She's
a net game.
She's got...
heck of a net game.
Totally. And a big, heavy topspin forehand. And Kerber, we know what she can do. So they were rallies brimming with variety. And yet they were so grueling and exhausting. These are two of the fittest players in the world. I'm sure of that. And Angelique Kerber had a match point in the second set. An hour and 20 minutes later, they were still playing. And I just thought, how cruel tennis is. It was like a physical battle, and you didn't know where the finish line was. And they had to give their all in every rally because they were such high-quality rallies. There was no option to just take your foot off the pedal for a moment. It was relentless the whole way through. 3 hours, 15 minutes, I think, in the end. The highest quality. And this is the section of the draw that Serena Williams has left.
Yeah, watch out for Kerber.
I just think Angelique Kerber, former champion, playing like this, got to watch out for her. I did think, will she even be able to move after this match? And then, when the match was over, she ran to the back of the court to fetch her towel. And I thought, okay, she's fine. she's still got all this energy to
burn. She's also one of those players that almost, there's a bit of the Kyrgios thing about if she's fresh, if she's feeling happy.
I thought she looked almost a bit different to even when she was at her peak. She looked lighter somehow. And yeah, I did that match was...
Do you mean lighter physically or lighter terms of the weight was off her?
Yeah.
Her shoulders. She was not, you know, sometimes she looks creased with the anxiety.
She was burdened with being at the top of the game. Yes. Definitely. You know, she had that sort of extraordinary record of only winning titles sort of every other year because she'd...
Yes, this might be the best match she's ever played in an odd year.
Yeah. She would do all her stuff in an even year and then the next year sort of be crippled by the burden of having to back it all up and having to live with the effects of what she'd done the year before. But yeah, I don't know. Watch out for Kerber. And the match was so special that I feel like it's one of those where whenever those two players see one another in a locker room, they'll just share a look.
You're right. Yeah, yeah. Those are great, aren't they? Yeah. I do like that.
So that was, it was the match of... Let's just say the match of the tournament so far, and if we have to revisit that assessment,
we'll be delighted.
Then we'll be very, very delighted to do so. Number two court also saw Elena Svitolina crash out to Magda Linette, and she's just quietly sort of just readjusting her status in the sport, Magda Linette, isn't she? This is, I think, her first top 10 win not by retirement. So a really big deal for Magda Linette, 6-3, 6-4. Svitolina, of course, was a semi-finalist the last time this tournament was played. So not a great Gems life day, because Monfils lost as well to Pedro Martinez.
Mm.
Does, at least they've got one another.
Does Svitolina crash out of slams? Or does she just
tiptoe out?
I thought she would go out, but I didn't think she'd go out today. So to me, that is crashing out, because that is... And again, I feel like I need to watch some Magda Linette, because I don't feel like I've got a feel for how she's just done that. I didn't watch the match. But I wouldn't have picked it based on history. I would have thought... I thought the previous round, Svitolina might have been vulnerable against Van Uytvanck, and I know she lost a set. But to me, it would have been a matter of time before she went out, and I certainly wouldn't have been saying crashed out.
Mm. Yeah, it doesn't feel like a crash to me, but I was surprised. I was surprised. The other big shock on the women's side today, or the confirmed shock, because it looked on the cards last night when the match was held over, was Maria Sakkari going out to Shelby Rogers, who's always just an uplifting presence in a tournament, Shelby Rogers, somehow, isn't she?
Absolutely, and has had some really good results at the non-clay slams since the tours resumed post-pandemic. I think she's gone out early at both Roland Garros's, but on the hard courts and now on the grass, she's dangerous. She's played Ash Barty a lot this year, and I think lost to her four times. So she could have had an even better year had she not kept running into Ash Barty. She's a dangerous opponent. Some interesting quotes from Sakkari afterwards about just how much she's looking forward to the Olympics. You know, we've seen a lot of players, I think quite understandably, this year say they're not going to the Olympics in very difficult circumstances. I think lots of them want to, but just for one reason or another this year don't want to put that in their schedule. But that's fine. But I just love it when players are enthusiastic about the Olympics, and Sakkari is one of them. She said sometimes she's losing sleep because she's worried that she might get injured before the Olympics, and she said that with so many players slipping on the grass, she was thinking, what if I slip and miss the Olympics? So I think she joked, you know, a positive is that I got through this tournament without getting injured, because all my sights now are on Tokyo, where she's obviously going to be a contender for a medal in the singles, absolutely, and she's playing mixed doubles with Stefanos Tsitsipas.
How cool is that?
That's really cool.
Although Tsitsipas is not very good at doubles. But Petros might have been holding him back. I don't know. Maybe he's a great doubles player waiting to happen. But Stefanik wasn't a success, was it? He had that run to the final in Miami
with
Wesley Kulhoff until Kulhoff dumped him. So maybe he is a great doubles player. I will withhold my judgment. Yelena Ostapenko is officially happening. She's on a 7-match winning streak. She beat Daria Kazatkina today 8-6.
All right.
In the third.
We have to talk about that. I mean, okay, I predicted Kazatkina would win, and she served for the match twice. Sick of it. Move on. And well done, Yelena Ostapenko. Yes, she's doing very well, and yes, she might be a threat for the tournament. Mm.
Okay. Yeah, she's happening. Karolina Mukova won today 3 sets over Camilla Giorgi. I watched quite a lot of that match. It was nervy from Mukova. She sort of squandered a lot of leads just when you thought she was going to sort of run away with it. She would falter, but ultimately her tennis was there, and I thought she was very good. She had a slip like so many players are having, but she was okay. It looked like there was a Nishikori fight back on the cards from 2 sets to love down on that same court 18. But it was just a single set fight back. Nishikori fails to take match to 5 sets. Shocker. He lost out to Jordan Thompson. Speaking of actual 5-setters, Taylor Fritz.
Yeah, I don't understand this.
Didn't he have surgery about 3 weeks ago?
Possibly even a bit less.
I think he had surgery on the 10th of June.
That must have been good surgery.
Yeah, that surgeon's putting his rates up because he won through the first round today. He beat Steve Johnson, his compatriot, 6-4 in the fifth set. His whole leg, left leg, I think it is. Anyway, one of his legs is sleeved.
All right.
I mean, if he stands sort of with the right backdrop, it looks like he's only got one leg. But when they first flashed up the match, I thought, what's going on here? But yeah, he's got this black sleeve on his whole leg.
Like the green screen when somebody walks into a studio wearing green and they just disappear.
Exactly. And he's, I mean, I don't understand it. Surgery.
Yeah, I don't understand
bonkers.
It at all.
But it happened.
Well done.
Very Taylor well done. Fritz. We don't know how he did it, but he did it. So very well done him. Probably the other most notable result of the day was from court number one, where Saronika Steyer beat Victoria Azarenka 6-4 in the third. Azarenka had led with a break of serve 4-3 in that third set.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I didn't see loads of this match. I saw points here and there. I did see Saronika Steyer's post-match interview, which was a joy.
I thought it might have been because I saw it on the screen and I hadn't got any sound because I was commentating at the time.
She said,
I've been thrilled.
David's got sound for great tennis matches, but no images. And images for great post-match press conferences, but no sound.
Correct. Hence why I need the podcast to fill in the blanks.
She said, I've been a professional tennis player since I was 16. And this is the best crowd I've ever played in front of. She said it was the best win of her life.
I think the interviewer wanted her to say that. And she was just committing to year for best win.
Right, best win of her year.
But in
right.
terms of atmosphere and yes. occasion, I think it was the best of her career. And she'd never beaten Azarenka before, as you said, and it had been 12 years since they played each other.
Really?
Saronika Steyer has been knocking around
for so
a really long.
Long
time.
Oh, I think it's one of the American young people would say this is one of the best low-key stories of the year, wouldn't they? I don't really know what it means, but that's what I think the context is. Because nobody really talks about Saronika Steyer as a topic, as a headline, and yet she has reinvented herself over the last year, and I think it's really something. And I'd like to, I think I might have said this before, I'd like to find out more about it. I'd like to find out how she's doing this, what she's done, because it's to play that many years on the tour and then to come back like this without having actually gone away to reboot, really. She's just sort of done it on the job. And maybe it was the pandemic lockdown that got her to find ways to improve, but she really has improved.
Yeah, it was honestly such a delight. And now she will quite possibly get to play on centre court again because her next opponent is 18-year-old Brit Emma Raducanu.
Who is it?
Who beat Markéta Vondrousova in straight sets today.
Wow.
Yeah, it was...
It was quite something.
It was quite something.
Because it looked like it was going to be a match we've seen many times before, which is promising young player takes the first set against the seed, against the more experienced player, in this case, a former Roland Garros finalist, and then fades away. Because Vondrousova was 3-love up in the second set. And then suddenly, Raducanu had another burst and Vondrousova couldn't get nearer. I mean, Raducanu reeled off, I think, well, it would have been 6 of the last 7 games with this overpowering tennis and out on court 12. And she looked, you know, in that set, pretty unstoppable. She had a real momentum behind her. And I thought it was very impressive the way she didn't let that match become the one we've seen so many times before. She took ownership of it and delivered on her potential. It was really impressive.
Yeah, she's got something about her. Definitely has something about her. So, yeah, that is such an exciting match for Saturday. A couple of other men's matches to round up. Zverev won today. He was very good. 7-5, 6-2, 6-3 over Tennis Sangren. Saw a few points of it. Looked just commanding, serving really well, Zverev. He'll be the next opponent for one-legged Taylor Fritz. Zverev, the heavy favourite going into that one, I'd say. And Matteo Berrettini won today in your first commentary match of the day, David. But it wasn't plain sailing.
No, it was 6-4, 6-3, 7-6. But the third set, he faced seven break points against Botik van der Zandschulp of the Netherlands.
Nailed it.
Who times the ball beautifully, and actually Berrettini was having a really hard job trying to hit through him. And actually these first two matches, I think Berrettini has been burdened by suddenly being a favourite to go all the way or to go very deep here. He handled it. He still won in straight sets. That's what you've got to do. And I think he will get better. I think he will start to settle down. But he wasn't timing the forehand as we know he can, and he didn't look as lethal and frightening as he often does. So work to do.
Still one of the favourites that aren't Djokovic for the title?
Yes, I would, because I think there is room for improvement, and I think he'll settle down. I think he was gripping the racket a bit too tightly probably today, which I understand, you know, when you're a favourite and you're being pushed.
So he'll play his next match on Saturday. Let's take a moment just to bask in the glory of tomorrow, Friday's order of play. We start on centre court with Ons Jabeur against Garbiñe Muguruza.
Oh, yeah.
We then follow with Dyla Dan Evans against Sebastian Korda.
Okay.
Then it's Denis Shapovalov against Andy Murray.
Yeah, this is all fine.
Court number one is Ludmila Samsonova against Sloane Stephens, Novak Djokovic against Dennis Kudla, Elisa Mertens against Madison Keys. And there's lots more elsewhere. Fanini against Rublev is on court number three.
That could be good.
Świątek Begu is on court 12.
Świątek's on court 12.
Yeah, I know, that's not great. Tiafoe Khachanov first up on court 18. Rogers, Rybakina. So just a glorious order of play tomorrow. And nothing more glorious, David, than seeing Dan Evans, British number one, on centre court against Sebastian Korda.
Yeah, it's a nice prospect, isn't it? I mean, he's pumped. I mean, he's really looking forward to that as well from whatever what I spoke to him about. Yeah, I think it's time to dial it down, isn't it? And, I mean, yesterday we were talking about his tactical approach and how he decided not to go forward against Dusan Lajovic because he felt he could beat him from the back of the court. I did ask him about what his tactics were tomorrow against Seb Korda, and he refused to tell me.
Because he knows how enormous the listenership of this podcast is, David, and it probably includes Sebi Sebastian Korda.
Yeah, so I've pivoted and I've decided to ask him about Nick Kyrgios instead. I've realised Nick Kyrgios seems to like four tennis players: Andy Murray, Hugo Humbert, Daniil Medvedev, and you. Why does he like you? And what do you think of him?
Yeah, we obviously played doubles together quite a bit at the start, so it was, you know, we'd known each other quite a while as well from the challenges, and we've always got on, so. I mean, four decent guys there, I think. So, no, I think Nick, I mean, ultimately deep down loves tennis, I think, and loves to entertain. So that's why he's back here, you know, probably the best tournament in the world. And he loves the Wimbledon crowd. And, you know, I think that ultimately brought him back here.
I did also ask if he'd ever had a heart-to-heart with Nick Kyrgios on a night out. He refused to answer.
Well, that's a yes, isn't it? Because if it's no, you just say no. Okay. You can grind him down, David. sensational stuff from Dan Evans, as always. We'll be dialing a Dan. Dialing Dan. Dialing a Dan.
Yes, that works.
But one specific Dan.
Yeah.
On future days.
Unless he goes out and then we'll have Medvedev.
Or we'll keep dialing a Dan. We'll see.
Any random one.
Right then. I think that's just about it for your day four Wimbledon tennis podcast. I can't believe how good this tournament is. And
it is,
that's
isn't it?
Without the 2 days that are to come. I mean, the thought of the next 2 days is just... So it's almost a bit much. It's making me Federer-esque giddy. I do need to improve my predictions game somewhat. That would be the icing on the cake, because at the moment I keep wavering over what turn out to be the right predictions and then letting Zeus down by going for the wrong ones. But David's done the same with Rogue today. Matt scored a win for Scousel Mousel. Congratulations to you both. Billie Jean is always winning. She's sponsored by Billie Jean King. Mocha is always winning. He's our Wimbledon mascot. Hello, Mocha.
Go on, Mocha.
Chris Albert Lee, always winning, because he's our executive producer. And our shout-outs. Who's winning in our shout-outs today, Matt?
We have Amy Kaufman.
All right, Amy.
Oh, like Andy Kaufman or Marta Kaufman.
Yes.
Writer of Friends. Oh, marvellous. And Amy writes to us, I think. So thanks ever so much, Amy.
Thanks, Amy.
We have Caroline Kaplan.
All right, Caroline.
That's a good name. Like Janis Joplin. Sort of the Caroline version of that.
How many she had to drink?
It's a bit of a stretch, but I like it.
It rolls off the tongue in the same way. Thank you, Caroline.
And Jean, or perhaps Jean.
Ooh.
Althoff.
Ooh. Thank you, Jean Jean.
That is cool. I'm going to go with Jean. Might be wrong. Might be right.
Thank you to all Jeans and Jeans
that support the tennis podcast.
That also have the surname Althoff.
especially this one.
Thank you very much for your support. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to the newsletter. Honestly, you won't regret it. And listen to us tomorrow, because we'll be back. Speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.